present The Higher They Fly, a novel by Christopher Hodder Williams, freely adapted for broadcasting by Norman Edwards.
Truman now?
In the after cabin, sir. Dr. Rogers has given him a sedative. He won't give any more trouble for a while.
He damn near had us in the drink.
Yeah.
It's a marvel the elevator didn't break.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you make of it, Bergen?
Oh, mental, if you ask me. Gone off his nut.
Mm-hmm.
I thought for some time that Truman was boiling up for something. Just now was his breaking point.
Sending him into number 3 systems, then.
And a shock when he saw the damage.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and knowing a detrimental report will be made by the captain.
Oh, sir, I'd never have reported him if he'd pulled himself together. Oh, Perkins, go and have a look at the customers, will you? Tell them, air pocket stuff. Reassure them, eh? I'll talk to them later.
Very good, sir.
Now, Jeff, this is what we do. We beat it for home. I'll talk to Fleming in a minute about my plan A.
Plan A, sir?
Yes, plan A. To ditch this aircraft in Southampton water, if it's not too choppy.
She'll break her back.
Yes, but there's a sporting chance she won't pitch over. Now, plan B, if the sea is rough or for any other reasons, I'll belly land her at London Airport. It's a nasty bang and all that, but, well, you never know, do you?
There'll be lots of foam available and ambulances. Very impressive if we make it.
Why, we might even get mentioned in the newspapers.
Oh, now you are being morbid, sir. Is there a plan C?
Yes. Now, Jeff, you and I will evaluate this chap Fleming when I talk to him again, and we'll give ourselves a deadline. If we decide to try and do any mid-air engineering at all, I say we need a minimum time allowance of 4 hours. Agreed?
Yeah, agreed. But who's going to tackle the job? I can't squeeze my fat body down there, and Perkins is a navigator, not an engineer. True.
Well, you can write him off. I can't leave the control, so there's only one chance left.
Is there one, sir?
Yes. See, if we can find a passenger volunteer with some engineering experience.
Hardly a chance in a million.
We haven't even looked for a volunteer yet.
So, is it plan A or B? Or should we keep an open mind until you've heard from Fleming on the RT? If he has a plan, well, it'd better be good, that's all I can say.
No, I agree, yes. Ah, isn't it damn silly? Here she is, flying as sweet as a migrating bird, and all that's wrong is something that hasn't got anything to do with flying at all.
Yeah, pity about Truman. He's had engineering experience.
No, you can bet about him, he's cracked up. How a bloke like that gets past the psychiatrist beats me. Hey, you know, Jeff, I'm beginning to wonder what really happened on that Czech flight.
The one that grounded, Fleming?
Yes. Now, one of them's been lying. Now, switch on the RT, Jeff, will you?
Sorry.
I'm ready to have another chat to the customers. And then I'll talk to Fleming again.
Well, the captain sounded very calm and collected.
Air pocket? Not on your life.
Then what made the aircraft pitch upwards like that?
I don't know, Dr. Rogers. But it scared me stiff.
That doesn't make you original. Take a look around.
Yes. Valentine's going to have apoplexy by the look of it.
And Miss Tyne had a shard of liquor all over the place she's studying. She's pretty calm, though.
She looks annoyed. And most of the passengers seem frozen stiff.
Shock. They'll chatter like magpies in a minute or two.
Jonas! Jonas! Where the hell is she?
While you've been talking to Crook, Robert, I've been studying the drawings of Stateline's Jet 446.
Well, Greg, so what?
I see you've made some notes.
Yes, a rough outline of what I think could be done.
If Crook reports back that it's his aircraft that has lost a wheel.
Yes, if he's been damaged, and I'm sure he has. It means that if he commits himself to my plan, there's no way back. It'll be a difficult decision for the captain to make.
Oh, just a minute, Robert. I promised I'd phone Ken Woodford when I got here.
Oh.
Excuse me, will you?
Yes, sure.
Get me Bresham 5-4, please. Do you know Dawlish?
No.
He's a director of the airline.
Oh.
He's making things difficult for Scrivens. After all, this isn't a ministry decision. All Scrivens can officially do is make sure that every possible aid is given to Captain Crook.
Yes, well, of course, this always...
Greg here.
Any fresh news from Crook?
No, not yet. Dawlish is being a nuisance. He's been on the RT to Crook saying he mustn't trust anybody.
I see. Fleming with you?
Yes, Ken.
Is he all right?
I'll let you know in a few minutes. I'll ring you back.
All right.
Well, Robert, be ready with your technical stuff as soon as you can.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I've dealt with Dawlish and his idiot barrier, there won't be much time left. Oh, incidentally, I saw that girl Julie in the corridor just now. What's she doing here?
Ken Woodford asked her to come here.
Oh, why?
He thought she could help me. Not a hope.
Why are you so useless with women, Robert? There was one, only one, who was any good for you, and you dropped her like a hot potato.
Well, if you mean Claire, she wanted me to go.
I suppose you would think that. Of course, if you give a girl the idea you may cut your throat, what's she supposed to do? Hide all the kitchen knives?
Oh, she spoke to you about all the...
Yes, but I'm not going to talk about your love life now. We haven't time. Just remember this. When you talk to Crook again, he's one of State Line's best captains. Don't apologize for yourself.
I prefer you to speak to him.
I bet you would. Nothing doing.
How many more flying hours, Bergen?
Allowing for letdown, 4 hours and 35 minutes.
Right.
That leaves no reserve for diversion. Do you agree, Jeff?
Yes. I make it 4.5 with a bit to spare.
I see. So if at all, we don't try any repair work for another 35 minutes.
What's cooking downstairs?
Well, roughly speaking, this chap, Greg, is backing Fleming. Scrivens, the ministry man, is backing Dawlish, our State Line director.
Oh.
Oh, by the way, how's Truman?
Well, according to Susan, he's very odd. Dr. Rogers is doing what she can to keep him under sedation.
Get on the intercom and ask Susan to come up here.
Right, sir. Do you know this chap Dawlish, Captain?
Miss Eccles.
Yes.
Well, what do you think of him?
He's a director of the company. Oh. That's what I think of him. Ah, Susan, there you are. Now, you might be able to help.
Yes, Captain.
All is hoo-ha between Truman and Fleming. What do you know about it?
Sir, I don't know what to think.
Now, you've met Fleming. What do you make of him?
Pretty nasty, I thought. He's absolutely ruthless about Jimmy Truman, especially about his flying.
Why?
There's a girl called Julian. It's all mixed up with her.
Well, how did she come into the picture?
You see, sir, Jimmy was involved with another girl as well.
Two women at once?
Yes.
So there were battles between Truman and Fleming?
Yes, sir.
How?
I did hear Fleming tell Truman once that flying an aeroplane wasn't a battle for supremacy. Mm. And he said something about fighting him on the controls.
Right.
If that means anything.
What? It means plenty. Truman say anything?
Yes. Well, he quoted a Greek saying, to destroy a man, find his weakest point, for therein lies the source of your own triumphs.
Oh, joy. I have a feeling I'd like a breath of clean, fresh air.
And so would I. I knew Truman fancied himself as a Don Juan, but I never thought he was such a blackguard. All right, Susan, thanks.
Very good, sir.
Well, what now, sir?
I'm going to call London Airport. Hand me the mic, please.
Budgeting coffee, Robert.
Oh, Julie, I thought you'd gone home.
I changed my mind.
Ah. Well, that's encouraging.
I saw Mr. Gregg a few minutes ago. Did he talk to you?
Yes.
Have you heard any more about Jimmy?
Only what I told you. He's Crook's co-pilot.
But Scrivens has been on the radio to Crook. Jimmy's cracked up.
Cracked up? What do you mean?
All I know is he lost control of himself and was ordered out of the cockpit.
What? Well, you don't see the kid.
I expected you to be pleased.
At a time like this, Crook's going to need all the help he can get. Anyway, it isn't going to make any difference to the situation between you and me.
Robert, Don't you really remember what happened on that check flight?
Well, I'd hardly fake amnesia when I've everything to gain by remembering.
Unless you weren't sure you had.
What are you suggesting?
Well, you know perfectly well already. Didn't the doctor say there's no such thing as amnesia?
He didn't go as far as that. I don't remember him calling me a liar.
Yet I believe you are. It's the wrong way round.
The wrong way round? What the devil are you talking about?
You said it yourself. You'd hardly fake amnesia if you had everything to gain by remembering. Don't people forget what they most fear?
Oh, but that's...
Childish? All right, it's childish. But it would be even more childish to go on as you are.
Now, wait a minute. Jimmy had the controls. He had the controls because he panicked and couldn't control himself, and it wasn't possible for me to restore things any other way than make Jimmy control the aircraft and...
Therefore control himself?
Yes. Yes. Then, through that sudden loss of altitude, I must have passed out. When we landed, they found me half-conscious and Jimmy in command.
But you couldn't tell them how it happened. Why?
Because I'd lost all my pride.
Over me?
Yes. Well, now, Julie, you better go home. I have a meeting. I've got to think. Greg can't handle that chap Dawlish alone.
Robert!
No. No, this is something I've got to do on my own.
The Higher They Fly, a novel by Christopher Hodder Williams, freely adapted for broadcasting by Norman Edwards.